Jeff Merrick, sometimes hey. When we do this very podcast,
yeah, man.
I feel like that you are overqualified to discuss certain subjects.
What do you mean?
Like, for example, I don't know, the history of junior hockey, the goals per game ratio for players like Ryan O'Reilly.
Ooh.
There are certain subjects on which I feel you are overqualified, whilst I may not necessarily be the most well-informed. However, today is opposite day, because today we are talking about something that I know, at least within the last few years, you have absolutely no knowledge of. We are talking about meat.
Yeah, the last 5 years, I'm pretty unqualified for this one. That's the last time I had a piece of meat.
I've been waiting months for this to happen, where we're going to discuss something that I have an expertise in because I am a carnivore, and you have no expertise in it because you are a vegetarian.
A carrot sore.
Yes.
A carnivore and carrots.
I am a, to use Jurassic Park terms, I am a meatosaurus, and you are a vegasaurus.
Kaleosaurus.
As it were.
Yeah.
Okay. We are, of course, talking about meat because Jimmy Devolano of the Detroit Red Wings talked about meat. Martin Havlett now of Team Alan Walsh has now talked about meat.
Oh.
So basically, if you missed it, and I don't think you have,
Pass the puck,
you missed it, here's how it went down. Devolano gave an interview to a publication no one's ever heard of.
IslandSportsNews.net.
Now, when I first saw Island Sports News, I assumed he was somewhere in, like, Aruba. I assumed this was some crazy island publication where Devolano is sunning himself on the beach, and all of a sudden, yo, man, I need to get some content for my newspaper, man.
He's thinking, this is just going to be local, distributed on the beach, and that's
it. Exactly. It's like all coupons for bars that you swim up to for beverages
and
a Jimmy Devolano interview. So Island Sports News had this interview with Jimmy D,
good magazine.
And he says this about the players. It's very complicated and way too much for the average Joe to understand.
What do you mean, Jim? Huh?
But having said that, I will tell you this. The owners can basically be viewed as the ranch, and the players, and me included, are the cattle. The owners own the ranch and allow the players to eat there. That's the way it's always been, and that's the way it will be forever. And the owners simply aren't going to let a union push them around. It's not going to happen. So
hang on. Didn't Bob Batterman use that exact same? Bob Batterman is chief counsel for the National Hockey League, also for the NFL as well. I think he used that exact same analogy in 2004, 2005.
Now, Nick, our good friend Nick Costanica, wrote that and investigated that, and I think Batterman has denied that he ever used that verbiage. Now. Again,
if not Batterman, because I remember specifically, dude, I lived at 2 hours a day on Leafs lunch the last lockout. That came out of one of the meetings. That was one of the. If it wasn't Batterman, I apologize. I shouldn't be ascribing it to Bob Batterman, but it came from someone. That analogy came from someone on the NHL side in 0405. I guarantee you it did. I guarantee you.
Well, the thing is that. Bruce Arthur nailed it, as usual. This is why he's the sports writer of the year in Canada. Because it's really sort of the NHL's Mitt Romney moment. It's the moment in which we kind of peer into the back room for a moment and see exactly how these guys talk about the players and think about the players and that kind of thing. I mean, again, the owners, not saying the NHL see these guys as cattle, but the owners see them as cattle. Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that. So Devolano gets fined. $250,000, was it?
Yeah. I thought it was supposed to be $1 million. I guess it's just up to $1 million is the max.
Yeah. He gets fined. Well, actually, it's actually in the CBA. I think the $250,000 is in the CBA as being, like, technically the max, I think. I don't think it's $1 million max. I think it's $250,000. So he gets fined. The team gets fined. Whatever, whoever's going to pay it, who cares? Point being is that someone spoke out of turn. The muzzle is slapped back on. And the NHL makes its statement. Now, what I don't get about this, and I think that you're kind of a like-minded individual on this point, the cattle thing in and of itself is probably true, not necessarily that revelatory, maybe not the kind of thing that you want to say during a CBA negotiation when the players are looking for any reason to climb up on the cross.
Yep.
But wasn't the other part of this story
huge.
That seemed... Bigger.
Yes. Go ahead.
Devolano talked about the Philadelphia Flyers giving Shea Weber an offer sheet and bumping up his price tag for teams that may or may not have been pursuing him, but also tendering him an offer sheet in a league where that sort of thing doesn't happen.
Can I give you the quote? Can I give you the quote?
Please, if you have.
This is Jim Devolano. Philadelphia,
the
operated within the CBA, and it's totally legit to do. Having said that, I will tell you there is an unwritten rule that you don't do that, but they did. And just like everything else in life, some people are great to deal with, some aren't. If you're asking me if it's right, I would say there is, again, an unwritten rule. We all know it in the NHL, but not everyone follows it. Holy effing smokes. You have an alternate governor, someone that's been in the league. Okay, Jim Devolano started as a scout, okay, an unpaid scout for the St. Louis Blues in their expansion year 1967. That's how far back this guy goes in hockey, from the St. Louis Blues, the New York Islanders, to the Detroit Red Wings, the general manager for a number of years, still one of the influential members within that brain trust of the Detroit Red Wings, alternate governor. Did I mention he went into the Hockey Hall of Fame a couple of years ago as well? Let's not forget here. So he's not some newbie. He's not like Terry Pegula speaking out of turn. Hey, I just bought the Buffalo Sabres. I'm going to shoot my mouth off. No, this is Jim Devolano, who's in the NHL long before Gary Bettman, long before Bill Daly, long before the executive in the NHL, saying there's an unwritten rule that you don't tender offer sheets. Bruce Garriock sent the tweet out yesterday about livestock and all that, and I said, Bruce, you know, we got back and forth, said the bigger issue is what he said about the unwritten rule, don't you think? And he said, well, ask the cattle that. I said, what do you think would be worse? What do you think the cattle are more offended by? An insult or collusion? Mm. Like, if I'm the National Hockey League, how come there hasn't been a bigger outcry about this around the National Hockey League Players Association rank and file? I mean, isn't this one of the bailiwicks of Donald Fehr back in baseball? Didn't he fight this successfully to the tune of millions and millions of dollars from Major League Baseball players? I don't know my labor negotiation history as well as I should, perhaps, as it relates to Major League Baseball. But I do know that collusion was a very uncomfortable subject and a very expensive subject for Major League Baseball. And here we have an alternate governor saying there's an unwritten rule that you don't tender offer sheets. Excuse me?
Well, yeah, but doesn't that bring us back to the point I was trying to make last week on Puck Daddy, where there are certain kinds of collusion that are actually beneficial to a league? Like, for example, not poaching each other's players and pumping up salaries even higher than they are. I think collusion can be healthy, is my point, in some cases. Not all cases, but in some cases, collusion can be healthy.
But when you I don't necessarily disagree, but the fact that he says unwritten rule.
Well, yeah.
There it is.
But that's code. You know what that's code for? It's code for the Good Old Boys Network.
Oh,
like
totally.
We've always said. That's the essential thing about the Devolano comments, is that it's all things that every player already knows.
You can say you don't believe in it, and Leafs general manager Brian Burke says he doesn't believe in it. He believes that they are inflationary, artificially, and it bloats the system. And that's cool. But to say that there's a rule that says we are deliberately keeping salaries deflated because we see this inflationary tactic called the offer sheet in the CBA is a whole different kettle of fish, isn't it? Wish? Hey, that rhymes. Isn't it completely different? It's like unwritten rule says, okay, there's a CBA, but then here's really how we operate. Like, what is this?
Yeah, but you know what the thing is?
It's like the Freemason CBA?
You still have teams that kind of go off on their own and do that sort of thing, though, right? Like, that's the issue with it, is that you still – it's not as if it's been – it's like collusion in the where none of us are hiring Ted Nolan sense.
Let me ask.
It's collusion in the let's not try to do this. Oh, look, people still do it sense.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
How many offer sheets have the Detroit Red Wings tendered?
None, from
what
I remember.
That would be my first piece of evidence. Oh, Jim Devolano says – that there's an unwritten rule that you don't tender offer sheets. Let's go back and look at the history of the Detroit Red Wings and how many offer sheets, because we have their alternate governor saying there's a secret rule that says we don't do offer sheets. If I'm the PA, I'm blowing a gasket over this.
And it speaks directly to the Weber thing too, doesn't it? I mean, Weber's the guy that everybody thought was predestined to go to the Red Wings next summer. And then the Flyers rush in. They sign him to an offer sheet. So either way, he's locked up in Philly or he's locked up in Nashville.
Well,
keeping him away from keeping the anointed replacement for Nicholas Lidstrom out of Motor City.
I still think he might be traded. I still think he might end up on Detroit, dude. Remember, There is not a no-trade clause in that contract.
Yeah, but do you think they would trade him to Detroit?
That is a huge one. I know, but...
I guess it all depends on realignment.
Which will now be in the hands of... Well, we don't know, because that's one of the sidebar issues being negotiated right now between the NHL and the Players Association.
Isn't that nutty? Like, that's one of the things about... Oh, but before we get off the cattle thing, by the way, the question of the day,
is
and
awesome.
It's one that we're extraordinarily proud of, and it's one that we're so happy... that you're into, because it's clear from the reaction you're kind of down with this question today. The question of the good day man. Is, if you could please, knowing that the NHL players are in fact cattle, you know them to be cattle now, thanks to Devolano and thanks to everybody else. The question of the day is, if NHL players are cattle, assign a meat product to your favorite player. So we're looking for NHL meat products basically today. And the answers that we've received are stunning. The depth of creativity. Clearly, a lot of you have pent-up frustrations about a great many things in the world of hockey. You decided to put them all, channel them into comedy.
Yeah.
Today.
You know what? Marty's getting it bad. Dustin Byfuglien's getting it bad. Kyle Wellwood's getting it bad right now. But some others get it as well. Right? So, and we'll give some of these out a little bit later on. You know what? You know who may have the best one out of the gate? And there are plenty more, and they're still coming in. Sean Leahy from Puck Daddy.
Yes.
Rick DiPietro. Tenderloin.
We also received a tenderloin for, I believe it was Peter Forsberg.
Oh, yeah.
Over email as well, which, again, both of them, spectacular.
John Cazera, Kyle Wellwood, fire-smoked bacon. From Mike Zigamanis, by the way.
What?
Yeah, Mike Zigamanis chimed in on this one. Right, he follows me on Twitter. We're fellow vegans. We're part of the secret cabal.
Oh, boo.
Does Gardein count? Yes, it is a fake meat product. Yes, it is. So all your tofurkies. And actually, for all of you other vegans in the audience, and if you're ever traveling to New York City and are looking for... Actually, Wish, you might dig this. Actually, you know what? If you and I ever end up in New York City, we're going to go a few places. And one of these places is called Kate's Joint, which is just like a quote-unquote normal restaurant. Chicken wings, chicken fingers. Chickens don't have fingers. Just ignore that. Chicken fingers, all that kind of stuff. Club sandwiches.
Sorry, was I just speaking with Steve Dangle for a second? Where all of a sudden there's several different voices.
I just turned my hat on sideways.
Hey, chickens don't have fingers.
Yeah, chickens don't have fingers. What are you talking about?
I hope there are people in the audience that know what we're doing on that.
Just
if
YouTube.
If you don't watch Steve Dangle, watch Steve Dangle.
Yeah, just YouTube.
Comedic
Steve
genius.
Dangle. Yeah, he's a great guy too. It's called Case Joint, and it's all regular pub food made vegan. And my favorite thing to get there is buffalo unchicken wings. And I've had both, and I cannot tell the difference. I am serious, Wish. Kate's Joint, New York City.
This is from Melissa. Not my favorite players, but can't pass up an opportunity to refer to the Sedins as a pair of Swedish meatballs.
Yeah, I got a couple of those for Douglas Murray, too.
Ryan writes in, a Ginla would be horse meat. He's got legs like a horse and is the face of the franchise, which they used in bad years.
Dmitry Chesnikov brings up a great one. Ovechkin's last name literally means sheep in Russian.
That's right.
Because he had the sheep picture painted on his skate.
On his blades, right, yeah. during the Olympics.
You know what? After seeing that, I remember I was doing Hockey Night in Canada radio, and I get a text from Claire, and she's like around the house, and she's pregnant with TJ, and she's like, I'm kind of bored. Mind if I mess around with your hockey equipment? And I'm like, what are you going to do? She goes, don't worry. Just trust me, okay? So I come home and she's painted a chimp on my skate blades, much like Ovechkin has his little sheep.
Oh.
You know what though? I'm telling you, man, that would be it's a cool industry to open up. I keep saying, Claire, you should do this, like personalizing hockey skates, like do like a little design on everyone's hockey. Everyone's got like a little pet name. God, there'd be a lot of Tasmanian devils with hockey sticks. God, that's the most annoying hockey tattoo. If you have a hockey tattoo, it's Tasmanian devil with a hockey stick. I'm sorry, we can't hang. We just can't. But there'd be a lot of those on skates.
Sorry. So Tasmanian devil, no. No, none of that.
You got Tasmanian devil tattoo with breaking a hockey stick over your head, look, I'm crazy. Yeah, we can't hang that. Sorry.
Completely off tangent here, and I don't want anybody to be creeped out by this, but I remember finding at one point, this was during my younger years when pornography was a bigger part of my life.
Oh, yeah.
I remember watching a pornographic film in which the participant had what appeared to be a National Hockey League Players Association tattoo.
What?
Yes. Should you not?
Had an NHL Players Association tattoo?
If memory serves.
Did Allan Eagleson make a porn?
It's possible.
Is that what you're saying to me?
It's possible that after things went sour, he became Jack Horner from Boogie Nights. and just started recruiting players.
Hey, I'm just trying to make ends meet. Oops.
Yeah, I believe it was either an NHLPA or some. It was some kind of an NHL players like tattoo. Yeah, it was very disturbing.
Can you find this?
Can I find it?
Do you still have this?
I think that, not to get really old school on you, but I believe this might have been during the days of file sharing, like Kazaa and stuff like that.
Oh,
for those of techies
Kazaa.
Out there.
I used to love
so
Kazaa.
No, I couldn't find it.
All right.
Our listenership furiously Googling
if anyone in the
audience NHLPA tattoo porno.
Listen, man, as hardcore as hockey fans are, and there are like, trust me, like there's a Society for International Hockey Research, which is an entirely different beast. But there has to be like a Society for International Hockey Research about porn, doesn't there? Like, doesn't there have to be
like an academic porn study of
some
sort, cataloging and characterizing all of the porn history?
Precisely. Doesn't that have to exist? Because my knowledge of that industry is embarrassingly low.
Mm.
It really, and I'm not proud to say that I don't know a whole bunch about it, but I just don't. But there has to be like, doesn't it have to be like the Puck Daddy of porn?
There probably is, and I'm sure that like I'd walk into that meeting and just like how if I walked into a research meeting and I'm like, man, I don't know enough about the WHA, I walk and be like, man, these guys know everything about bestiality. It's Comic-Con all over again.
It'd be like you're watching like, you know, the foreign channel on Sunday afternoon, and it just sounds like this, and every now and then you hear like something you recognize, like 214 lands down. That's kind of like how that meeting I think would sound for me. I pick up like a couple of words and a couple of terms, like, oh, I recognize that and that, but everything else just sounds like.
The thing about the tattoo is that, like, much, and you know, I'm sure there's a segment of the audience that understands what I'm going to say. There are certain times when you're trying to view something and you see something that completely takes you out of the element. Like, I remember in college, we rented an adult film to kind of like goof on or whatever,
right?
And you know, research purposes.
Sure.
And we're watching it, and then all of a sudden they cut from a scene next to a swimming pool to an inflatable skeleton sitting in a lawn chair by the swimming pool. Nonsensical. But at that point, you say to yourself, wait a second, what? And I imagine if you're watching that for pleasurable purposes, you're completely taken out of the moment then. Much like if you see an NHLPA tattoo on some dude.
Thought we established it was Alan Eagleson.
It might be very well.
And you love hockey if you're watching Alan Eagleson porn.
We go from meat to meat. Matt McDonald, if we're assigning meats to NHL players, then in fairness to Merrick's plant-eating brethren,
thank you.
Any overhyped best player not in the NHL who comes over from Europe is a tofu-based veggie burger. No matter how many times someone tells you that, they taste as good as the real thing, they never turn out quite right. Now, with that segue, we will begin the program because I believe my radio partner has something to say about NHL players snatching jobs in Europe.
Yeah.
All right, so with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's enough to shampoo a baby bear.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I'm just happy you got into Bruce Boudreau's pants yesterday.
Debate hockey.
Here's the Carolina Hurricanes won the Stanley Cup.
Pop culture.
You ever been to the bar in Boston where they have the pornographic claw machine?
No.
And more hockey.
You know there's dumb and then there's hockey dumb.
Yeah,
well,
where's
hockey
porn
dumb,
show?
Folks?
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
God, the porn content of this show sneaks up on you, doesn't it?
We're bored.
Shampoo and baby bears, porn claw machines.
And I'm telling you, Alan Eagleson porn.
Joining us on the show today, by the way, Taylor Stevens. Kidding, of course. Joining us on the show today is a man who, the only thing pornographic about this man is the way he calls a fight.
Ah, woo.
That would be Jack Edwards, voice of the Boston Bruins, will join us on the program today.
You know
Long
what?
Time
you know what?
Since
I just
talked to Jack on the show.
You know, I just had a conversation with someone. And we were talking about collateral damage that a lockout has.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because, you know, we're trying to figure out how much each team stands to lose versus how much players stand to lose if there's no season, like if it's scrubbed all together. Players would stand to lose $1.5 billion. We figure about $20 million per team, $600 million is what the owners would probably somewhere in the neighborhood lose. The Red Wings, since they include their preseason games in their season ticket package, first exhibition game they lose, they would be down $1.4 million. But you know what an interesting one was as well, Wish?
What's that?
Collateral damage in the NHL last lockouts. So in and around. So these are, you know, like the bars and the employees around the NHL. 1,800 alone in Toronto, by the way, folks. They figured about 30,000 people was a collateral damage for the last lockout for the last
Jesus.
Year. And think about this, and we'll ask Jack about this as well. How much do you think bars in and around the around the Garden make a night on game nights?
Oh, for sure. Or any city.
A million bucks. They're down a million bucks every time there's not a game.
Listen, as a DC bar fly around the arena, because where else are the journalists going to go after the games? I know what my bars look like on a game night, and I know what my bars look like on an off night, and they ain't no different. I mean, there's a huge difference.
Hey.
And the money that these guys are going to lose in cities that have arenas with a high concentration of nightlife around them is stunning. It's stunning. You can't quantify it. That's why already you're seeing stories like out of Vancouver where you had bars laying off people in preparation of losing preseason games.
There are bars that are terrified in Toronto here, dude, I'm telling you, because they are jammed on Leaf nights. They're just like, I'm going to get killed. I'm going to get destroyed. Do you think you have an obligation, Greg Wyshynski, I'll ask you this point blank, as a hockey fan to, although there may not be any games, you have an obligation and a responsibility to try to keep those bars afloat and continue drinking there, despite the fact that there are no games?
Well, there are two ways to look at this. You could look at it the human way, the compassionate way, mm-hmm. which is to say that you should continue supporting your bars, continue supporting your hockey shops, continue supporting places that are going to be adversely affected by this work stoppage. Or you could take the inhumane, unfeeling, cold, sadistic take that a few people have, which is that much like a National Hockey League player knows what the circumstances are, knows what the pitfalls are by getting into this line of employment, it's the job they chose. Henceforth, if you're a bar near an arena, surely you understand that while attempting to make a buck, while attempting to do something that in many cities is impossible, which is to keep a food-based business open for more than a decade, because many of them fail so quickly, you knew that you were depending on hockey fans, and you knew that hockey is an unstable sport.
And when it's on, it's a bonanza, but when it's off, it's trouble. Remember we talked to Brad Marsh when he's doing his ride across Canada? I mean, he had that place, he had the restaurant at Scotiabank Place. Marshies. Man, how come so many guys in Atlanta Flames open restaurants, whether it's Brad Marsh or Pat Riggi? Like, you go down that Atlanta Flames list, like, everybody opened a restaurant. Anyway, add Marshy to that list, and that last lockout killed him. Totally destroyed him.
To be specific here for a second, I am of the former and not the latter. I think that if you have a bar you love and it's going to take a hit during the lockout, go there and spend some dough. Like, if you're a DC sports fan and you're like me, you head to the channel after the game. Yeah, they're going to be okay because there's going to be Wizards games and stuff, and they're going to be okay because now all of a sudden the Nationals and the Redskins are worth watching again, so they'll be okay on that score when they play. But get down there and buy a couple beverages.
All right.
Or if you're going out with your folks after work, head there. You know, do that kind of thing. Now, that said, if you get into the sport of hockey as a player, you have to understand that there are pitfalls, there are repercussions, there are things that could happen that are going to affect your employment. Which brings us to the next topic on the program today from Luke Gill on Twitter. What's y'all's opinion on players playing overseas during the lockout? Do you think it hurts the cause? Now, as far as hurting the cause, probably not, because the whole point of it is to show a level of solidarity and to show that they are ready for this lockout in a way they weren't previously, because by going to Europe en masse, it shows that they have been ready for this work stoppage, and that's the whole point of this posturing right now. But does it hurt the European player, all of these NHL players going overseas, Jeff Merrick?
Does it hurt the European player? Yes. But don't blame the players that are going. NHL players take jobs at training camp every single year. When players get traded. Remember when Brad Stewart got traded? What did we say on this podcast? Well, looks like that's it for Jason Demers in San Jose. Like, it happens in the National Hockey League. And I don't understand why players get the scorn. Maybe it's because of the price tags attached to him. Oh, a millionaire hockey player is taking a guy who's making $70,000, taking his job. First of all, he's locked out. He's not allowed. The owners have said you cannot play here. So his services become available. Why do the players get the scorn heaped on them and not the teams that are signing? Like, why do you blast Rick Nash and Joe Thornton and not H.C. DeVos for saying, hey, you know what? You're more important to us than this scrub who's been here for, he may have been here for 5 or 6 years.
Why
is it not the team that gets the venom spewed at them? Oh, Joe Thornton going and stealing a job. No, Joe Thornton was offered a contract and he said, okay, sure, I'll go play. He's not walking into a rink and saying, hey, buddy, yeah, your skates are in the parking lot. Join them.
But they're also already pimping merch for those guys, too. Like, you go on the DeVos website, there's a Rick Nash scarf. There's a Joe Thornton hats. Wow. I mean, it's clear that they've made their decision on
pecking order. I want one. I want one of those.
A Rick Nash scarf?
Don't you? From DeVos?
Well, totally. It is sort of Ukrainian colors, so that's...
Oh, it's the blue and yellow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you dig it.
I definitely dig it. I can dig it. Can you dig it? But no, I get what you're saying, and I think it's just like a lot of things in this lockout. Like, blame can be assigned in so many places you don't even know where to start, right? That said, you know, it goes back to what a lot of players said during the last lockout, especially players that were overseas, like Trevor Kidd was one of them. Just about like – oh, not Trevor Kidd. I'm sorry.
Corey Hirsch,
yeah. Got my goalies mixed up. Talking about how unfair it was, those guys go over there. They make a life for themselves. They carve out their niche. Independent of the National Hockey League, then all of a sudden the National Hockey League comes there and then they're out of a gig.
But didn't Corey Hirsch take someone's job? And you know what irony? You know what the irony of all ironies is about Corey Hirsch? You know who he lost his job to that year?
Who?
Martin Gerber, who plays for that team, who plays for the Swiss national team.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, was there always a goalie vacancy before Corey Hirsch arrived? Or did he take someone's job? It's called sports, ladies and gentlemen. People that take said, your jobs. There's a shelf life for everybody.
Don't you feel bad for the AHLer that all of a sudden now is an ECHLer?
I totally do.
Okay.
I completely do, and I sympathize, and I feel bad for them. But I don't think anything's been done wrong, right? I also feel bad for the career American Hockey League guy that can't get into the lineup, that can't get into the National Hockey League, like the Corey Locks of the world, or before him, the Eric Westroms of the world, or before that, the Jody Gages, the Tim Tukeys of the world. I could feel bad for those guys who are awesome hockey players, but by way of the team that drafted them, perhaps petty politics, perhaps size prejudice, never got a shot in the NHL. I feel bad for those guys, too, but it's life.
I mean, they might get – I mean, those kinds of players might get a shot in the NHL when we go to replacement players.
Ooh.
What? Hey, listen. We've got another guy today in Dan Cleary of the Red Wings making noise about losing a season. Now, granted, these players that are saying this, and he's not the first. Mm-hmm. Nash said it. Ovechkin said it. Other guys have said it. I mean, they're clearly at the mercy of the owners here.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, now is it posturing? Is it something that Donald Fears told them? Because you have Cleary saying this. I think people don't think it can go a year. As players, we think it can maybe longer. Mm-hmm. I think the league is waiting for us to make the move, and we're waiting for them to move. So someone has to move, and I don't see it coming from our end. We've given them a couple of good options that they can work with, and they obviously feel it's not good enough.
Here's where we're at right now. As we sit here on this Monday, both sides are saying we're willing to meet at any time. The NHL is saying we'll meet once you guys agree to a haircut right off the top. NHL Players Association says, no, we're not doing that. So no one's meeting. Essentially, the NHL has a piece of paper in front of them, and the National Hockey League Players Association has a piece of paper in front of them. And until one side comes off their piece of paper, there's no point in getting together to talk.
Yeah.
Because the opening question is this: are you guys ready to take less money right now? No, we're not. Okay, well then we're not meeting. That's it. That's where we are. That's very, very simply. That is exactly. Now, John Shannon did a nice blog on this on the weekend. There are other sort of ancillary issues that are being worked on, smaller things, tweaks to the CBA, but at its very core, the stalemate we're at right now is the NHL says you need a haircut right now. And the NHL Players Association says, no, we don't. Our hair's not too long yet.
Our reader Pumper Nickel writes in, can I get a birthday shout out via a shot of vodka on the air from my favorite Polish podcasters? First of all, Ukrainian. We cannot give you a vodka shot on the air, but we can give you the next best thing.
Yeah.
A shot of the voice of the Boston Bruins returning to Merrick versus Wyszynski, Mr. Jack Edwards. Hello, Jack.
Well, good afternoon, boys. How are you?
We're okay. Trying to make the best of a miserable situation around the National Hockey League. How are things with you, Jack?
Oh, up and down, trying to keep myself busy with projects around the house and all that, and playing Mr. Mom and, you know, enjoying that and everything. But this is ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, it's just absolutely absurd.
It is absurd, quite absurd. And I think that as you are a veteran of the previous lockout, how does this one smell compared to the previous one insofar as how long we might be out?
Well, first off, the previous lockout came in an environment of such financial stress for so many NHL teams, and it was the owners who got themselves into that situation by just outspending their own means. And, you know, that said, in a competitive business, it was somewhat understandable. You know, whenever we talk about the money involved, it's ridiculous. So, you know, you have to talk about principle only to keep it in a situation that you can actually argue about ideas. Because if we're talking about real money here, it just doesn't matter. I mean, all of these people involved on both sides are making more money than most of us will ever see in our lives. So let's just dismiss that. But the last time around, it sure seemed as if there was some justification for the league and ownership to say, we've got to get things in line. We've got to redesign the financial system in order to create competitive parity and in order to sustain you know, cost assurance or cost certainty, I think was the term that Gary Bettman used over and over during that lockout. Well, they got it. And, you know, if you look at the competitive results, let's see now, Carolina, Anaheim, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Chicago, Boston, Los Angeles. I don't see a pattern to the Stanley Cup champions since the last lockout. The league has gotten more popular than ever. There's a floor and a cap, and teams that have been closer to the floor and right at the cap have won the cup. You know, the actions of the owners clearly show. Yeah, I mean, when you get teams like Edmonton, which is a small market team, and Carolina, which is a small market team, supposedly in distress, offering massive contracts this past summer to players, it's really hard to understand how they could plead financial distress. What really looks like what's going on here is the old capitalistic gotcha, where there's a bottleneck that the process must go through, and you have to pay toll at the bottleneck. And Gary Bettman is saying the toll is you're going to roll back your salaries immediately. But this time, I don't hear a lot of hockey fans. In fact, I haven't heard a single one, and hundreds have talked to me about it, who support the position that ownership should get a rollback in salaries and completely redesign a system that's been darn near perfect for the last few years.
You know, and to further that point too, Jack, to those owners, and Craig Leopold, maybe the biggest offender, you know, seeing who he signed this offseason. My question then becomes to whether it's, you know, Craig Leopold or the Philadelphia Flyers for the offer sheet to Shea Weber. What's that paper worth? Now, how do you look someone in the eyes? You know, what's that piece of paper you signed Ryan Suter to worth, Mr. Leopold? Like
is it worth $98 million or is it actually worth about 75.5? You know,
yeah, right.
I mean, you know, I rarely agree with stuff Alex Ovechkin says, but what he said recently about, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically, you know, I signed a contract. They said they'd pay me that much money, and now, you know, they're saying they're going to pay me that much money less 24%. That wasn't the deal I signed. You know, truthfulness is truthfulness. Honor is honor. And it's breaking down pretty badly right now. And what's really a shame is that there are more passengers on the NHL train than there ever have been in terms of people who passionately follow the sport and want to make the sport part of their lives by investing a massive amount of their disposable income in it and a massive amount of their time and their passionate devotion to their teams. And the people in control of the sport are systematically deconstructing the bridge over the canyon that is about 5 days away from us right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're systematically deconstructing that canyon. Instead of opening with a reasonable offer and getting the players to build their share down as the share, as the gross increases, they come out with a, you know, to quote someone who was recently fined, you know, we're the ranchers and you're the cattle. And and by the way, the reason he got fined was he was dead on. That was absolutely the truth. And that's just a pity, because it just shows a lack of leadership and a lack of getting it. And it renders insincere any future statement from those authority figures who say that NHL fans are the greatest in the world. Well, if this is how you treat the greatest people in the world, I certainly wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of you.
The you bring up the inroads that the league has made in the last couple of years, and I agree with you, and I think Boston's a great example of how hockey fever can catch on pretty quickly with the product that we have on the ice and with a winning team in town. What would this lockout do from a local sports perspective with Boston? I mean, do the Bruins take a step back in popularity if this thing goes a half a season, if it goes a full season? Because they've got a nice share right now of a pretty crowded sports market.
Well, if you look at the situation that the Bruins potentially had before all this animosity boiled to the surface, you know, the Celtics lost Ray Allen. It's an aging team that made it to the conference final last year, which was a terrific run by a very spirited bunch of veterans coming off their own lockout. The Red Sox had one of the most disastrous seasons in a generation. And the Bruins came back with their core, their nucleus, signed for the foreseeable future. People expecting great things from the team. Not really missing Tim Thomas too much, because he kind of wore out his welcome. And they were set to take over the town. They really were. They were set to take over the town. And I can't help but think that every single day that goes by without the Bruins being above the fold on the front page of the sports section, so to speak, is going to cost this team equity that is going to take years and years to rebuild. And, you know, when people calculate hockey-related revenue, what they conveniently forget is how long it took just to get back to even after the last lockout. I was calling games at TD Garden in 06, and I'm telling you, some nights we would sign on the air and there would be 9,000 people in a 17,565-seat arena. And part of the problem was the team had decided to take its roster apart and go total free agent after the lockout, and they got burned because they went against the grain and it didn't work. But part of it was just because it was so darn hard to win people back to the rink. And you know, it's a terrible situation, because it's an opportunity missed. And, you know, most of all for L.A. Kings fans, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They had waited two generations to be champions, and now, you know, their coronation ball gets canceled because of an inability to come to a reasonable deal.
Yep. Try to divide up $3.3 billion. Hey, Jack, from an on-ice point of view and from a development point of view, as you have a look at the Boston Bruins roster, if the season is scrubbed, which player does that hurt the most?
I think it hurts Tyler Seguin the most. He's the guy who's just arrived. Yep. You know, he's a guy who led the team in scoring, led the team in goals. He gets more exciting every game. He worked his butt off this past summer, and that was part of the reason he got the deal that he did, because he has taken an extremely professional approach for such a young guy. He was really going to be, as far as I could see, one of the go-to guys on the power play, which was going to give him an even better chance to get statistical notice and to help the team. For him to lose a year of development right now would really be a pity, because he can't go to the AHL. They can't wave him through. He's got too much NHL experience by just 10 games. And so he's going to go to Switzerland. But, you know, I don't know. It'll keep him fitness sharp, but I don't know if it's really going to help him in the NHL, because the last goal he scored last year, the one that sent Game 7 in the first round against Washington to overtime, was the dirtiest and most beautiful goal he's ever scored, because he could have gotten his nose broken. He jammed for a rebound. He knew he was going to get flattened. He got flattened, and he got the puck in the back of the goal, and it sent the game to OT. But, you know, if he shows, and it looked as if he did, if he shows that he's willing to score that kind of goal, you know, then sky's the limit, because we know he can score from 30 and 35 feet.
One of the things that the National Hockey League is working on, if and when the season starts, is the potential for a scarlet letter list of divers being posted in every arena, be it in the locker room, be it in the referee's room, a list of offending players who dive and embellish with frequency put out there publicly. One of the leading names that they mentioned in their little conclave was Ryan Kesler of the Vancouver Canucks. What is your thought on trying to do a divers list, put it out publicly, and do you believe Brad Marchand would be on such a list?
I mean, he might be. He might be. You know, he's been known to embellish. You know, during our telecast, I know we're labeled as absolute black and gold homers all the way, but on our telecast, we've criticized Zdeno Chara for going down kind of easily for a guy who's 6'9 and 260 pounds. And, you know, it doesn't go over well person to person, but, you know, we still call him the way we see him. I'll tell you what, I would volunteer to do a weekly show where we can unmask them one at a time and go into depth and replay and show them. I mean, that would be a hell of a show.
I love the idea. I love the idea of Jack Edwards as Brendan Shanahan doing the divers videos every week.
Yeah, you know, I would be thrilled and honored to host such a show, and it would help make up for this dearth of income during the lockout.
Was there, for me, you know, the answer is the Buffalo Sabres game, the first time they meet. But for Jack Edwards, was there one date on the calendar when the schedule came out that Jack Edwards said, I can't wait for this game? For me, it's the first game against the Buffalo Sabres. Here comes Steve Ott, and here comes John Scott, and we all know what happened last year. Is it the same for Jack Edwards, or do you have a different game in mind?
Actually, it was opening night against Philadelphia, because every game the Bruins and Flyers played last year was a sensational hockey game. The Bruins are like twin sons of different mothers, the Bruins and Flyers. It's amazing how these two teams enjoy what we refer to as a very robust style of hockey, a style of hockey where knowing you're about to get a two-minute penalty is okay as long as you get your 2 minutes worth, if you have confidence in your penalty kill, because it can change the game. It's a rough game. It's meant to be a rough game. That's part of the thrill of the game. And the Bruins and Flyers get in these tremendous tilts. And for me, that was just going to be, you know, like the powder keg that was going to start this season. I was very, very excited about that game, even though it wasn't ours. NBC poached it, but I still was excited about the game.
You could do the alternate pirated commentary on a stream of some sort. Merrick mentioned the Buffalo Sabres, and I feel like we've already had a few listeners who said we have to ask you this question. Your thoughts on Steven Ott joining the division?
I think it's tremendous. You know, the thing about Ott is he's got talent. He just does some stuff that makes you wonder if he's slightly sociopathic. But that's okay. You know what? That's okay. You know, the Bruins aren't exactly Boy Scouts out there either. But to be able to see this guy six times a year, we're really going to learn his character in full. Because really, we've been getting just a flash of it every year, or two times every 3 years with Dallas. You get a little dash of it, and you say, okay, well, you know, I'm not sure I really like that, but, you know, we'll take a deeper look at it next time, and maybe you see another bit of it. I don't know if it's the Bruins that bring that out in his personality or if he's like that all the time, but a player in the division, you're going to see that a lot more. You know, I think that one of the great errors the NHL has made over the years is it tries to make every single player who pulls a sweater over his head a hero. You know, what I thought was just a blatantly cheerleader effort to try to make Matt Cook more of a human in the 24/7 series was in Boston. It was laughable. You know, this is a guy who ended Mark Savard's career, because Savard was never the same after that, and he's never going to play again. And it was intentional, and it was from behind, and you know, you can parse it out any way you want with Rodney King style freeze frame video. That was a hit to hurt. There's no question about it. And you know, so it's okay for there to be villains, because villains get your blood rushing. Villains sell tickets. And you know, I think the NHL shouldn't mind that there are guys who wear the black hat. Some of those guys who wear the black hats get their teams totally fired up.
Oh, yeah.
They loved Steve Ott in Dallas. They absolutely loved him. So, you know, Buffalo's got him. They've got Patrick Kaleta, who's, you know, made a few friends in Boston.
Huh.
Coughed off. But, yeah. You know, what it is, it's great. I mean, it's one of the wonderful things about hockey is that it's very hard to watch a game that you know something about and be neutral about it, because the game moves your heart. It moves your emotions. And to me, that's the saddest thing about no hockey coming up.
Or at least it should. At least it should. I think that's why you and I, Jack, and Merrick, too, have a very sort of like-minded view of this game, is that we cover it from an emotional standpoint. And sometimes that means a rooting interest, and sometimes it doesn't. But there's a connectivity to hockey that if you watch it, and you're right, you don't feel something, whether it be you want something to occur during a game, a fight, a goal, what have you, overtime. I just don't understand people that are able to cover this game or watch this game with in sort of a disassociated, sort of non-emotional connection to it. And I've never been able to understand that.
You know, we've all watched newscasts where the anchors deliver the news with a stiff upper lip. And, you know, there are stories that are just the facts. You know, here are this week's unemployment figures. But, you know, they're acting, okay? That's acting. That's what it is. It is not honest. I worked in newsrooms for 20 years. You guys work in newsrooms. Newsrooms are one of the most opinionated places in the world.
And dark, and then, Jack, dark.
And then people go on the air and they act as if they don't care. That's acting. In sports, to me, that's dishonest. Let me have it, you know? Let me agree with you or disagree with you. And that's okay. Disagreement is what stirs the pot. It's what makes talk radio interesting. It's what makes life spicy. I have no problem with that. If you want the Christian Science Monitor to cover the National Hockey League, go talk to them. I don't think they have any interest in it.
Jack, you're beautiful. Last one here. Let's get to the pub and throw a dart. Where does it land on the When We Play Hockey Again board? When do you think it's going back?
Well, you know, I'm a stupid optimist, and some people would leave off the optimist part, and I don't blame them that much. That's okay. It's good to have opinions. But I still think Thanksgiving. I think that the Bruins Black Friday matinee makes a tremendous opener. It's an NBC game. It's an unofficial holiday in the United States the day after Thanksgiving. It's a great location for a hockey game on national television, both in the U.S. and in Canada. And frankly, I can't believe that when the governors closed the doors, that the big market U.S. owners and the Canadian teams, who are all doing so well financially, say to these whiners from non-hockey markets who want everybody to play down to the lowest level, that they don't say, fellas, we got you your cap. Now listen, you got to deal with it, okay? Mm. Find a way to win without spending to the cap. Don't make me keep losing money by having my arena dark.
Yeah.
I just got to, you know, maybe I'm just a crazy optimist, but that's how I feel.
I love it. All right, Jack Edwards, thank you so much for joining us. We will chat with you again, hopefully talking about what happens on the ice versus what happens in the boardrooms, sir. Thank you so much for joining us on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Always good to be with you, fellas.
Thanks, Jack.
I'm an optimist, too.
You think, as we call it here in Kanakistan, American Thanksgiving?
Here's my vow. If the NHL and its owners decide to end the lockout in time for Black Friday, mm-hmm. I will buy multiple Game On hats. As I said before, my only condition in settling this lockout is that they must make spiffy Game On hats like last time with the NHL logo inside the O, which will be a puck. I will buy multiple. I will buy 10. I will buy 10 Game On hats from the NHL store should they come back by Thanksgiving.
I want to see you on the front page of Puck Daddy dressed like a Roman centurion. That's what I would like, with a sword and a shield and barely enough to cover up the part of you that is most a man.
If the NHL comes back in time for Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving, yep. I will hold a parade here in Ashburn, Virginia. I will ask all of the hockey friends that I have here to come out to this parade. And in the middle of this parade, which I believe will have ticker tape, I will kiss a sailor.
But you really got to smooch him, too, and dip him a little bit, too.
I will dip him
you
got to
go right in.
Smooch him. And right? Someone will snap a black and white picture, and it'll be on the front cover of the Washington Post.
Right.
And it will say, the lockout is over, and it's me kissing a sailor.
Game on. Drop the puck.
You know, he brings up the point about villainry and being the bad guy is something that we've talked about a lot on this show. Like, you know, I believe that the big overarching Joseph Campbell narratives are what make hockey great. You know, the warriors and the bad guys and the white hats and the violence, the whole thing, the heroes and the villains. I mean, I don't expect them to be this introspective, but the Bruins are the villains. Like,
oh,
that
God,
is why
yeah.
you They're, watched, that's... like, even more so than the Flyers. These days, because I think there are actually some virtuous, and this is maybe the 24/7 effect, there are some virtuous things about the Flyers that I find them to be a more heroic team than the Bruins. Like, I'm sure there are people out there that watched that Flyers Penguins series and saw the Flyers as the ones wearing the white hat in that series.
Yep, totally agree with you, 100%. But they still have that fog of what happened in 74. Fog, Freddie Shiro, look at me go. They still have that fog of what happened in 74, 75 in that Broad Street Bullies teams. And for whatever reason, does it seem, because it does to me, I remember I asked Peter Zezel about this, the late, because I used to skate with Peter once a month after he retired. I said, what is it about when you put on the Philadelphia Flyers jersey, everybody just looks bigger? Like, do you think that, like, honestly, Wish, like, when you look at, like, player X who just joins the Philadelphia Flyers, and is it, I mean, it might just be because of the stereotype, but doesn't everyone in a Flyers jersey just look bigger to you? And it's the only team that goes again. Remember when they went to the black jersey and essentially had like an all black uniform. I always thought black was supposed to be slimming. They looked bigger than ever.
Keith Primo looked
bigger, biggest hockey team of all time.
Keith Primo looked like a skating black hole.
Totally.
He looked like a black hole on skates. He looked like anything that was close to him would be sucked into his gravity and then disappear. To answer your question about whether the players look bigger, I thought about that when Weber signed. And I thought to I pictured Weber in a Flyers jersey.
Oh, God.
And Weber's already friggin' huge. But he was like, a skyscraper in that jersey in my mind's eye.
I don't know what
the
it
only
is.
The only player who didn't look bigger in that jersey is Briere, because he can't look bigger in any jersey.
Sammy Kapanen too. Yeah, probably Danny Briere and Sammy Kapanen.
Impervious.
Yeah.
Impervious to the Flyers.
Like, is the jersey working? Nah, it still look like a runt. I don't know.
Mark Erickson, our good friend, who's a big Columbus Blue Jackets fan, tell it to me straight, buddy. If hockey is back by Thanksgiving, is there still an All-Star game? Dicey proposition, because now we're all hearing that the Winter Classic is in trouble if this thing dips into the first or second week of November. All-Star game, you imagine, I would imagine the All-Star game would be canceled at the same time as the Winter Classic, no?
I would have to think so.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think, probably second week of November for both.
Because here's the thing, right? Like, the NHL wants to cancel the Winter Classic before the players can use it as a bargaining chip.
You know, it's like that, because I just watched the movie the other day, Usual Suspects, when Kaiser Sose, when the Turkish gangsters busted on his family, and so instead of having giving them all the power, he shot it and killed his own family to show them what a man of will was. I kind of got that Kaiser Sose kind of vibe about Gary Bettman when he talked about the Winter Classic and shutting it down so they can't use it as a bargaining chip.
Right. Or when Keanu Reeves shoots Jeff Daniels in Speed to take out the hostage.
Like that.
Too. Yeah. Like that. Because really, there's no better metaphor for what's happening now than a bus that's going really, really fast, and if it slows down, it'll explode. And also, it has to jump over a broken highway. I think that the All-Star – you know, the irony of the All-Star game being canceled, of course, is that neither side wants it. I mean, I don't know why they hold the All-Star game. None of the players want to play in it outside of Scott Hartnell, and the owners don't like shutting down the season, right? So why do they even have it?
Because the NHL likes it. It's a great – well, it's first of all, and you wish we were both there in Ottawa this past season to see it. It's amazing for kids. Like, the look in the eyes of kids is fantastic, and the look in the eyes of the sponsors, thank you very much. You have the nerve to write checks that keep the lights on. Is pretty sweet too.
Yeah, so it's children and sponsors.
That's it.
Are the reason it
exists.
That's it.
Bingo.
And Scott Hartnell.
Him
too. So yeah, I imagine to answer your question that they'll probably knock down the All-Star game when they knock down the Winter Classic.
I would think so. And here's what has to happen as well, because both sides, as we mentioned earlier, are each holding a different piece of paper. And that's why we keep saying, well, they're not even speaking the same language. By the way, Chris Johnson tweeted from CP that Bill Daly said that the NHL is waiting for the NHL Players Association to submit another proposal. Why? The NHL stance is this. First negotiating point. How much of a haircut are you taking? We're not taking one. Okay, end of meeting. So I mean, what the player supposed to do? You can just set one and say, all right, yeah, we'll go down to 49%. See, the players, if you want to get this thing, if you're serious about, this is what Larry Brooks was talking about a little bit in the Post yesterday. If some of the moderates have more of a voice in this all of a sudden, there has to be a way for everybody to save face here. Or else
on the owner's side or the player's side?
Both sides. Both sides have to save face. If there's going to be a season, both sides have to come out looking like they've, quote-unquote, won. God, I hate... the one thing that sports does that really poisons things is it positions everything as a winner and a loser. Everything has to be decided right away. Maybe it's the like button to everything. But sports really couches everything in wins and losses and wins and losses.
Donald Fehr has been very, very clear about that the negotiations don't have winners and losers.
I agree with him.
We see it in two black and white terms.
But I agree. But in a lot of ways, both sides need to at least save face in all of this. Like, would it be very hard just in order to, keep some credibility on the owner's side, specifically those that have signed monster contracts this offseason? Minnesota, I'm looking your way. Nashville, by way of Philadelphia, I'm looking your direction as well. Would it be so awful? Would it be so awful for this to be the ultimate deal? First of all, revenue sharing in the neighborhood of $200 to $220 million. Okay, couch that. But then a sliding scale of percentage for the players that goes down to 50%, that eventually gets to 50%. Like, why does it have to get there right away? Right? Like, we all think that ultimately the deal is going to come down to a 50-50 split eventually. Would it be so tough? Like, would there be such an economic hardship to the NHL if you went 54, 53, 51, and then 50-50-50?
In the final three years. In theory, no.
But the NHL is insistent there is money back, boom, right away. Like a large give back right away.
Matthew McGreevy writes in, Jeff Carter is a months-old rotisserie hot dog. Our question
from the
today, by
mark?
The way, if the NHL players are cattle, what kind of meat product would they be? Dario Ronzone, Dario in Denver writes in, Clearly, Jeremy Roenick is spam. I think that's probably a Twitter comment right there, isn't it? It's pretty funny.
We had a couple good ones here a second ago. Oh, where's the Max LaPierre one? All right, here we go. Al Rahim Bandali on Twitter submits Maxim LaPierre, chicken fingers. There you go, from Bitegate.
Tyler Eves, Biz Nasty would be like the grade F Taco Bell meat. By the way, that meat's delicious. I don't care if it's grade F. I don't care if it where it comes from or anything. It's just delicious.
At Evilimi is agreeing with me. I'm a total carnivore, but I totally second the vote for Kate's Joint. Lived around the corner from there for years, and it's delish.
Jeff Scott writes in, if NHLers are cattle, assign a meat product to your favorite player. Sean Avery is a chuck steak that hasn't been tenderized. He thinks he is a T-bone, but no matter how hard he tries, he is way too tough and not easy to chew. Not many people order him, and when they do, he is often spit out.
Wow, that's a mouthful. Neil, Ilya Kovalchuk steak.
Steak. There it is.
Ray
Ballinger, Shea Weber filet mignon, no fat, all protein, but no flavor for interviews. Seriously, the guys like Brock Lesnar, he's better off eating the microphone instead of talking into it. Wow, Shea Weber is Brock Lesnar. He's like, I've interviewed him over the phone, and I agree.
Shea Weber is huge. So. I remember I did, when I was on Hockey Night once, I did a whole hour. Him and Ryan Suter came in, and I thought like the Incredible Hulk sat next to me. He's just freaking ridiculous. Matt Hogan, Linus Omark, hot dog. We got a few hot dogs, a lot
nice.
Of Alexander
that's
Ovechkin, but that's
a good
one. Roger, Marty Brodeur, pork bellies.
Jackson Stonehammer. Oh,
good. Max LaPierre would be a swan pate.
Oof.
This is the diving, you see.
Curtis Nielsen. Oh, right. Oh, very good. Oh, very good. Okay, I went over my head. Curtis Nielsen. Apologies. Since Merrick says that Crosby has hockey butt, he does too. Does that in turn make him rump roast?
Hey, now.
Ow.
This one is pretty amazing. This is from Luke Irwin. Sidney Crosby, battered neck tissue.
Oh,
so good it'll make your head spin.
Oh.
I get it.
Oh,
here you go. This was one of your examples. This is from Jasmine. Ryan Nugent Hopkins and Jeff Skinner, Veal.
Yeah,
that
young.
That was actually what you were saying before. Yeah,
and we talked this morning. Yeah, Veal. Really young. That's an obvious one.
This is to tie a nice bow around the earlier conversation about pornography, because I misremembered the tattoo. This is from Hockey Steve 54, who is out of
the tattoo.
Yes,
Roger.
This is Hockey Steve 54, who has outed himself as a like-minded individual.
Good dude.
Was it an amateur video where the chick used a remote camera and the logo was on his shoulder?
Wow. No way.
That's his first tweet, and I have to answer in the affirmative.
Oh, what's the name of the... Hold on. Okay, all right.
We now it was, in fact, not an NHLPA logo. It was, in fact, not an NHL logo. He nailed this. This is the truth, because it just jarred my memory. Yeah. Was the logo a maple leaf with the player silhouette in it? It was. It's the Hockey Canada logo. That's what it was. It was a Hockey Canada logo on his shoulder.
Bob Nicholson did a...
I like how all of your choices are like middle-aged older
guys,
gentlemen.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think I'm into?
Or, I don't know, dude.
I watch it.
I don't know you. I mean, I
watch it like
stuff,
some
but...
of my dad's age. Like, you're sending me right to therapy if this is the case.
What's the name of said film?
Now, he doesn't remember, but it was an amateur clip.
Has there ever been?
It was a dude with an Hockey Canada tattoo.
All right,
pervs, get out there and track down.
Please.
That's the thing I'm looking for.
Yeah. We got, like, there's no NHL. No news coming out. Ooh, they're meeting today.
By the way, Katerin writes in, Patrick Kane has to be vodka marinated chicken. Would that be like beer can chicken? Beer can chicken would be the more apropos one, I believe.
Oh, someone wrote in and said Dustin Byfuglien, turducken, by the way.
Oh, that's good.
That is a good one.
Hey,
can we go back to porn? I don't even know if they do themed porns anymore. But has there ever been a hockey-themed porn?
Oh, I'm sure there has to be.
Has there? I'm smelling a QOD.
I have to admit.
Wednesday's QOD?
Again, not to go down too deep into the rabbit hole here, but I'm not a fan of themed porns. I'm not a fan of, like, the movie parody porns. Like, when I was at Comic-Con in Baltimore a couple weeks back, they actually had a table there with a bunch of superhero and movie parody themed pornos that they were selling, like on DVD. I couldn't sit through like a Star Trek parody porn.
Hey,
like,
you know what I always wondered? You know, like when Wonder Woman like ties the golden lasso around you?
Yes.
You're supposed to tell the truth?
Yes.
How come no one says, like, I really want to sleep with you? Tell the truth. You look great. You're really hot. That would be a Wonder Woman porn.
Tell me where the diamonds are. I got to tell you, that outfit is very flattering.
That's right.
Keep your mind on. Where did you stash the guns? Oh, no, but right there. I mean, that's a lot of thigh, is all I'm saying.
I just got two for high sticking, so I know.
Oh, we are so close to another shampooing the baby bear moment on the show. We should probably end it before we go,
go too far.
All right. First off, Sarge the Duck. A number of people have sent this in, but we will close with Sarge the Duck. Timu... aged salami gets better and better as it gets older. Apologies to everyone else who wrote in Timu salami. You were all brilliant. Also brilliant, Jack Edwards, for bringing some great information, including the fact that the Bruins broadcast evidently had called Zdeno Chara a diver at some point. Evidently, Brickley and Edwards not fearing for their lives at all. When doing these broadcasts.
You know, there's a lot of things that I can't imagine seeing, and Zdeno Chara going down, like, really light on a hit is probably one of those things. Like, how would you move? It's like trying to bump Shrek. How do you knock Shrek down? That kind of would be like, who could move that guy? Like, how many times have you seen guys, honestly, just, like, trampoline off of him? Like, oh, Chara's going back to chase the puck. Oh, here comes, I don't know, pick a player. Pat Coletta, he comes charging in on Zdeno Chara. What's going to happen? Chara's going to stand there, and Coletta's going to bump off him like those jobbers used to for King Kong Bundy. It's going to be it, right? Like, everybody is SD Jones when you're Zdeno Chara.
Right. Although he really couldn't take a bump. That's all for the show today, I believe, folks. My name is Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet.
Pornnet.
Pornnet.
For Porn Daddy.
I tell you, man, my knowledge of it is bad.
Section 328 writes in, classy episode today, and then hashtag hockey porn. Well,
more of it.
Listen, man. Hey, listen, it's the Blame the Lockout. Anybody who goes through a dry spell knows what we're talking about here.
It's going to get goofy, I'll tell you. I'll be honest with you.
Like, no. We
As the season goes on, to answer your questions,
by the way, we do have many things in mind, including something that Merrick and I were bandying about, where, you know, we're going to have some of your old favorites on the show. By old favorites, I mean players that you may have watched for years and that may now have some time on their hands.
You know what I'd like to do? And I just got his number the other day.
Yeah.
And I want to call him to get him on the podcast here just to talk about his mask. Remember Gary Simmons with the Cobra mask?
No.
Oh, dude. Off to Google Images.
All right.
Gary Simmons, Cobra mask.
We promise you, this is our solemn vow to you, the Merrick vs. Wyshynski listener. It's not going to be 60 minutes of HRR for the next 3 months. Okay? Nope. We're going to have some fun here. We're your oasis from all that nonsense. That's what we are.
It'll be hockey, some laughs, some more hockey. I got to find something new to get into this year.
Insofar as what?
Well, insofar as, you know, what's going to fill the NHL void for me. Like, I'm a big believer in, you know, every day, you know, whether it's picking up and buying a magazine that you never thought you would buy, or watching a TV show that you never thought you would watch, or reading something that you never thought you would read. I'm a big believer in doing that, just to expand yourself a little bit and make yourself a little bit, I don't know, better, more intelligent, give yourself a different worldview. I got to find what that thing is for me this year. I mean, I spent the entire weekend watching OHL hockey. Which is effing awesome. But I got to find something else, too.
If you have a spiritual outlet for Jeff Merrick, please write in at Jeff Merrick on Twitter.
Yeah, man.
Or to puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com.
Yeah, that's good.
Section 328 clarifies, don't get us wrong, today's level of classiness is right in our wheelhouse. Thank you. Matt McDonald writes in, yes, there is hockey porn, and it is terrible.
Oh, really, eh? Titles, please. Titles.
Buddy, thank you for listening to the podcast. We'll join you again on Wednesday. Oh, Wednesday, Rob Simpson?
Yeah, Rob Simpson, who's got a new book out about the Detroit Red Wings. Rob Simpson, a longtime broadcaster, writer as well. Actually, the last big book that he wrote was the, was it the Bruins book? Was the, he did the autobiography of, with Ray Scampanello. So he worked on that
Scampi.
One. Was it Scampi's? Was it Scampi's or the Boston Bruins Black and Gold book? I can't remember
Don't
now.
Recall.
He's coming up on Wednesday.
And just to make sure that we all know that we've begun the week in the gutter, but moving up to many intellectual pursuits, book guy on Wednesday, and then of course on Friday, is it Jonathan Gatehouse?
Jonathan Gatehouse, author of The Instigator, the rise to power of Gary Bettman in the NHL. I'm about halfway. You've read the whole thing, right?
Yes,
I'm halfway.
Well,
I'm almost done with it.
Yeah,
I'm just past the Winnipeg Jets part.
We'll probably both get done with it by Friday, but that should be a good one because it's a fascinating book.
Yeah.
And we'll obviously be taking your questions about Gary Bettman to pass on to the gentleman who has written a definitive account of Bettman's rise to power.
Yes.
It's called Revenge of the Sith. Kidding, of course. Kidding, of course. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you on Wednesday. Bye. Thank you.